We're here now with Nick Hendrickson from the Sandpoint Ranger District North Zone of the Idaho Panhandle National Forest, which also includes the Bonners Ferry and Priest River Ranger Districts. And I'm also here with Jean Gerst. She's helping co-produce this interview today, and she is an occasional broadcaster, board member, and volunteer here at our community radio station. So welcome, Nick, and thanks for taking the time to talk with us today. This is a timely informational interview as we go into the hot summer months, fire season, and as we know, there's already some forest fires in the southern part of Washington and some in southern Idaho. So why don't you tell us, you're the fire protection technician here at our Forest Ranger District. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, and we'll go from there.
All right. Well, first off, thanks for having me. This is my 11th year with the Forest Service. So I started in Bonners Ferry on a engine as a temp employee. I got my permanent position in Priest Lake in 2020. And then in 2025, I got the fire prevention job in Sandpoint. So, yeah.
And what does that position entail?
So it's what they call a secondary fire position. And basically, we do all of the education. So all the school programs are through us. We do all the school education. We help run the Bonner County Fire Prevention Co-op. And so they do a lot of structure assessment. We rent reader boards, maintain the portal signs, and put up appropriate messaging for the time. It's kind of like a do-it-all job.
So proactive, informational, and then reading the signs on the forest of prevention and guessing what's coming.
Yes, yeah. So like our three E's are education, engineering, and then enforcement. So we do, if fire restrictions are in place and people are having campfires when they shouldn't be, we are able to ticket them, basically.
I already have a lot of questions. The Bonner County Fire Protection...
Prevention Co-op.
Mm-hmm. Prevention Co-op. I hadn't heard about that before.
Is that
just part of the Forest Service, or is that like a collaborative?
It's a separate entity altogether. It just includes the Department of Lands, a lot of the fire chiefs, so Northside, Clark Fork, Hope, Sagal. I'm probably missing a few. It's basically all the fire chiefs, and then the state and the feds. We kind of just have a co-op where we raise funds and whatnot.
So a cooperative, collaborative endeavor to kind of cover all the bases?
Yeah, exactly. So it just kind of gives us a little more reach, and it brings us all together, so our information is kind of unified that we're getting out there.
And more on the prevention side of things.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Protecting homes and...
Yeah, we try and basically give people as much information as we can about what they can do to protect their neighborhoods, their communities, or even just like their property if they have acreage.
We can get into that. And as we know here in North Idaho, one of the concerns local citizens and homeowners have is forest fires. So we're surrounded by national and state forests. Fires are a clear possibility and a reality. With that in mind, we're doing this interview so that our listeners will be informed as possible about the role the Forest Service plays and what to know, what to do and not do, and how to be part of keeping everyone in the forest safe during the upcoming fire season. What is the mission and scope of services of the National Forest Service?
So yeah, the mission of the Forest Service is to sustain the health, diversity, and productivity of our nation's forests and grasslands to meet the needs of present and future generations. Basically, we're helping manage the lands so you guys can get out there and use them safely and enjoy it.
A huge mission.
Yes, yes.
And complicated, I'm sure.
The Panhandle has 2 million acres, the Panhandle Forest. So
it's a large body of forest.
Mm-hmm.
When you say diversity, we're not just talking about keeping humans safe, but also the ecosystem of the forest in general, the flora, the fauna, mm-hmm. etc.
Yeah. Yeah, there's we have biologists and silviculturists, and they help manage endangered species, endangered plants. We manage grizzly bear gates that we open and close depending on the time of year, so they're not just invaded upon, I guess, by people getting out there, yeah.
And you're involved in regulating the timber take from the forest?
Yeah, that's like beyond my purview, I guess, but definitely we do have a lot of timber sales.
Timber sales, that's the word I was looking for. Take.
yeah, we
timber sales.
Yeah, we have a whole timber crew that goes out and they create units that we then log, and then we either will like pile them and burn the piles, or if it's too steep, we'll do what we call a broadcast burn, where we put people on the ground and we kind of try and burn all the disturbed debris.
The forest stuff.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the National Forest Service is organized under the United States Department of Agriculture. What's important about that is that so it's a federally funded service organization.
Yes.
What else do we want to know about that?
And I think it's U.S. Forest Service, correct? It would be the official name?
Yeah. We're the U.S. Forest Service. We're kind of under the umbrella of the USDA. We have very similar missions. The USDA also deals with all our agriculture land, so I guess that would be kind of the where we branch off. We're much more involved in kind of like our grasslands and our forest lands. We are funded through them too, yeah.
Funded through the USDA.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that all kind of trickles down from the top.
Exactly.
Through your structure of districts and regional districts and local districts.
Yeah, exactly. It USDA gets this big budget, and then they allocate everything down, and then the Forest Service starts allocating it to more local forests and regions, and yeah, so it's a big trickle down.
You mentioned biologists and a few other services at the Forest Service looking at the health of the forests. How important is that when we're also looking at fire management and fire outlook, projection, things like that? How important is the health of the forest and who kind of decides that kind of thing?
It's like a top priority for the Forest Service to help maintain a healthy forest, obviously. Biologists, they can kind of play into where we can put units, timber units. So if there's an endangered species close by, we should obviously avoid that. Or streams, we avoid those. Basically everybody all together, the main goal is to kind of create just like a healthier environment for the forest.
So if there was a stand of timber that was invaded, we'll just say the pine bark beetle, that would be something that the Forest Service would then manage in a way to bring health back to the forest.
Yeah, I believe they actually have some programs where they have ways to try and catch those pine bark beetles and manage those areas so they don't spread. I'm not super familiar with that side of it. Those biologists and silviculturists really know their stuff.
Well, let's get to what you do know. Well.
Yeah.
You are a fire protection technician and managing prevention, protection of the North Idaho Forest. What and how does the Sandpoint Ranger District look at the upcoming fire season? And are there ways to predict or forecast what we can expect? I know that in putting this together and talking to some of the spokespersons from the Forest Service, it really comes down to weather.
Yeah, weather is huge. So we use predictive services, and that's like through the National Interagency Fire Center. And they do a wildfire potential outlook, and they kind of issue these every month. They basically just help us understand what we're going to expect in the next few months. There is like a link I could give you. It is very long, so probably don't want it read out.
Is that something we can post on our website?
We'll have to look into that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think if you Googled NIFC Predictive Services Outlooks, you could probably find it.
And from those predictions, how does that then influence and inform your next steps as you move along into this hot summer season?
So it can influence our preparedness level, which is how many resources we keep in the area. It can influence how we move our fire danger scale. You know, you see the Smokey Bear sign goes from like low to high to extreme. Whether we'll put restrictions in place for campfires and things of that nature. It's a useful tool, and it's sort of like weather. It can change sometimes depending. It's not always like 100%, it's very useful.
So a big question, what's it looking like for the summer?
Yeah, I just looked at it this morning because I figured you might ask. And so June were normal levels, and then July they predict a higher fire danger than normal. August is the same, and then it drops back down to normal in September. So really kind of looking to shape up like a typical fire season.
It seems like heat, the temperature, dryness, meaning lack of humidity, and possibly winds, although those come in at the last minute often. What else is there besides those three things that, and precipitation, probably.
Yeah, we had a low snowpack this year, everybody knows. But we have gotten a lot of moisture, just a lot of rain. It has been warmer. That's led to a lot of thunderstorms as well. Luckily, there's been a lot of rain with that. So on top of the weather and, hot and dry for a long period of time is definitely going to lead to higher fire danger. And so we have what we call fuel specialists. And they will go and take fuel samples of live and dead fuel. And basically, the lower the percentage of moisture in those, the more likely our fires are going to be more difficult to contain.
When you say fuel samples, we're talking about forest products on the forest floor and trees that are down, things like that?
Yep. So there is live and dead fuels. So they will take branches from living trees, and they kind of like dry them in this thing, and they're able to do some math to calculate like how much moisture was in that. And then the dead fuel is on the ground. Basically, the lower that number is, the more likely a fire will spread quickly.
So that's go ahead, Gene.
Yeah, so that's like done as a sampling around
Local
forest?
Yeah, there's, I don't know the spots off the top of my head, but there's different spots around the forest that they go to, and they just trend it throughout the year. So I think it's every month or every couple weeks they go out and they get more samples, because trends are like a big thing for firefighters. Like seeing where things are going is very useful to us.
And so what does that make you do when you get a prediction or a fuel samples that show it's very dry? What then happens in your department for protection? Do you estimate how many, as you said, resources that you would need? And how do you put it together ahead of time?
Mm-hmm. So that goes above me. I don't make mm-hmm. that choice. Mm-hmm. But there is basically a group of people, so the Forest Service, the Wildland Fire Service, the Coeur d'Alene Tribe, and the IDL, they all have fire managers that kind of come together, and they have to vote unanimously on whether they want to raise the fire danger level or not. And then that all plays into, like, if our trend is getting really hot and dry, then we may bump our preparedness up to bring in more outside resources.
And what does that look like, bump our preparedness up more resources? Is that firefighters having the tanker, the air tankers more accessible, closer? I mean, how does that look?
Yeah, it's both of those, actually. So R1, so Region 1, which is us, and R3, which is like the New Mexico area, we have an agreement where their fire season is earlier than ours. So we send people down there to help them, and then they send people up to help us. And yeah, we can also just stage aircraft closer to us if we feel the need.
Who manages the human resources for forest firefighting, such as the firefighters and the jumpers or whatever?
Like, where are they coming from?
Yeah, who's managing the crews ahead of time, getting them trained, things like that? Is that the Forest Service?
Yeah, I believe BLM also has smoke jumpers. They have their own, the BIA, which is the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They have their own crews, IDL. So they do have a guard school for new people that has all of those agencies go together. But typically, yeah, we all sort of manage our own resources.
And then when we can get to this later, or we can talk about it now, when there is a need for an emergency response, we'll call it, there's obviously a forest fire, who sets that in motion? And what is the chain of command? Because you have a lot of different agencies working together. How does it play out?
So theoretically, you see smoke in the woods, you call 911, dispatch will get a hold of the Forest Service, and they'll delegate that, if it's in Sandpoint, to the Sandpoint Ranger Station. And then our FMO or AFMO will kind of place resources or send resources to that. And it doesn't have to be Forest Service going to Forest Service. Its closest resource will respond. So if IDL happens to be the closest resource, they'll respond to it. We work together with basically everything. They help with all the prevention co-op stuff, the school education, they go. They help us do our prescribed burns and we help them. It's very unified.
And it sounds like you've been doing this for a while. You're well coordinated and know people. You have a network that you trust and you've worked with before.
For sure, yeah. And nice. I mean, everyone is really good and really passionate about their job. I don't think anyone gets into this job just to do it. They love being outside. They love working hard. They love doing good.
Yeah, working to protect the forest.
Yeah,
and homeowners and the creatures in the forest, things like that.
Just, yeah,
it's an emergency response that no one questions who's in charge.
Yeah, it's typically depending on the scale of the fire, we have different incident commander levels. Not to get too into the weeds on it, but. Mm-hmm. If it's a very complex situation, we'll usually just have the most senior firefighter.
And the fire last year, I was on evacuation alert for a couple of weeks for the, mm-hmm. I forget what they called it now. It was the one down.
In Sagal there?
In Sagal. Yeah. So that got kicked up to a pretty high level, I believe.
Yeah. And so they called in, what we call them teams. And so it's a group of people that, they're coordinated before the season starts. They all work together, and then they get sent out. It's this very big organization that helps get us a lot of resources quickly and, really get on the ground running.
It was very impressive.
Super helpful, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Communication is essential in those times. You mentioned the fire alert levels. Who determines and sets the alert levels? What conditions and who determines... and what are the levels and what should we be doing when we see those signs and things like that?
And that's what you were talking about before, I think, with the low, medium, high.
Yeah,
and
yeah, you get a little together smoky, bare hand or whatever. Yeah, yeah. So that's the forest managers, which is the spokesperson from the Forest Service, the Coeur d'Alene Tribe, Fire Service, and the IDL. They all come together and... Basically, the levels are low, moderate, high, very high, and extreme. You notice that we do not have a no fire danger. It's always a chance.
Yeah.
And basically, that level, the higher it goes, the quicker fire can spread, the more likely fires will start, and it, how difficult it will be for us to put out gets more increased. But yeah, I mean, you should always be careful with fire, obviously, but definitely pay extra attention in the summer. We should not be leaving campfires that aren't completely put out. Fireworks are never allowed on the Forest Service and should not be lit off, especially in the summer.
You mentioned calling 911, and that made me think, is that, you know, I'm walking in the woods, or I see a lightning strike somewhere and there's smoke, or I just notice something. Is 911 the first point that I should call?
Yeah, that's what I would do. We do have, like, you could call Coeur d'Alene Dispatch, but are you going to remember, you know, that number? No, it's 911. They're very capable of getting it over to us quickly.
Know where to go.
Yeah. And I would say, like, a big help to fire crews is when you call a smoke in, like, give as much information as you can, like, where you're at, what direction you're looking, like, what peak you think it might be on, because those lightning fires, sometimes they poof up and then they'll, like, go away, and it can be very difficult for us to find them. Like,
right. You don't see the smoke anymore, but the fire is still on the ground.
Yeah. You know, a cloud cover comes in, so it's just not as obvious. So you saw it. The more you can give us, the
and
better.
Maybe even a picture.
A picture's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
I never would. Yeah. I'd never thought about that. Mm-hmm. Just call 911. That's easy.
Yeah.
It's very easy. And a good thing to remember, because as citizens, we're looking at the forests. We're looking up, and you can't have just the rangers doing that. You really probably get a lot of calls.
Yeah, call-in is big. It's super helpful, obviously. We do patrol around a lot in the summer. We spread resources out as best we can. But, you know, it's a big forest, and we only have so many engines and people. So you guys definitely help out with that.
Yeah. And also, citizens can be part of prevention. So these different fire levels, you mentioned putting out your campfire. Is there ever a level? So someone wants to go back country hiking, we'll say, or horseback riding, and spend 5 days out in the back country. What are they supposed to do ahead of time? Are they supposed to check in, get a permit to go in? Or and what should they know about the conditions of the forest and what is available for them? Open fires, closed fires, things like that.
Yeah, so I think the slogan is know before you go. We do our best to have proper signage and, like, current signage on trailheads and portal signs. But at the end of the day, it is the responsibility of the people, like, going out to understand if we're in fire restrictions or not. If we're not in fire restrictions, you're allowed to have a campfire. Make sure, you know, you put it out completely before you leave.
And how would you describe putting it out completely before you leave?
So, yeah.
Let's just do a little campfire.
There you go. It's like I'm back at the schools. So you have your pit, water and dirt, right? Make mud. And mud, you stir that around. And basically what we tell the kids to have their parents do, not them, is if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave. So if you can put your hand over those coals and still feel some heat, you should put more water and more dirt until you can basically, like, put your hand in that and it's just cold mud. Yeah.
Makes a big difference.
Oh, yeah. And I think people underestimate how hard it is to put a fire out. They think they can pour some water on it and it'll be fine. And it may even look that way at the time, but fire can sit there for weeks sometimes and then come back. Lightning trees are notorious for that. We'll get a storm and then 2 weeks later we'll get the smoke.
And I imagine hanging around for a while after you have done your thing with the fire and checking again.
Yeah. I mean, if you're leaving that day, put it out after you have breakfast and then kind of hang around, finish packing up, check it one more time. And if it's cold, you're good to go.
You mentioned know before you go. So where do you find out what you need to know?
So the IDL has a fire restrictions finder map.
IDL stands for Idaho Department of Lands.
Yeah, that's right. And so you can just Google Department of Lands fire restriction map, and it basically kind of looks like Google Map, but it shows you what stage you're in, if there's any restrictions. It's really useful, really intuitive. You could also call your local ranger station before you go, and the front desk should be able to let you know, like, what restrictions you're in. Yeah.
So on the web, you would go to IDL, but if you're like me and you like to talk to people, real people, mm-hmm. you could call during your regular business hours.
Yeah, you could call the ranger station or the IDL. They both have offices here in Sandpoint.
Here's a question. You've decided to go backcountry hiking,
mm-hmm.
and you're back there, and a thunderstorm comes in, and a lightning strike happens, and all of a sudden there is a forest fire. What do you do? What is safe practices?
Run.
Well, I wrote down you can't outrun a forest fire, so staying alert would probably be part of it. But
yeah, I mean, definitely preparedness. Before you go, if it's predicted there's going to be heavy lightning and thunder, it might not really be that fun to be backpacking anyways. And yeah, if you see smoke out in the woods, you're way back. Just try and work your way back to where you parked and get to service and then call 911, kind of like what we talked about earlier. Sometimes after big lightning storms, we can have airplanes fly over for us and try and spot smokes if we suspect there could be fires in areas. But like in the backcountry like that, it would be extremely helpful to know, because no one's going to be able to see it that far back in there other than those hikers.
So is this the point in the show where we talk about Smokey the Bear? What does Smokey say?
Only you can prevent forest fires, right? Yeah.
Do you bring Smokey with you when you're going to school?
Yes, Smokey makes an appearance at all the schools. We make sure it happens. Usually he's very excited to be there, too.
So what is the... I mean, we all grew up with that, right? Only you can prevent forest fires. And so that is true. What can citizens do besides being very careful in the backcountry, putting out your campfires if there's not a no-burn alert? I'm thinking maybe more about homeowners.
Mm-hmm. So for homeowners, debris burning is a big issue in kind of the late spring when people are like trying to get that last pile in, you know, and I get it. Nobody wants to stare at a pile of red needles all summer. But just making sure when you are burning piles, you're doing it early. They're a manageable size. Having water on hand, I would say, is a must, especially later in the season.
And shovel.
Shovel. I would recommend that for camping as well. Water and a shovel and a bucket would be just good protocol to have. And those piles, just make sure you're checking them. You know, don't go burn your pile in the back nine of your property and then forget about it for 2 months and go, oh, where's that smoke coming from?
I've also experienced, because I live near the campgrounds that are out on Sago Peninsula, just going out for a hike and there'll be a campfire that wasn't put out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think vigilance, you know, just if you see something, say something, whatever, wherever that phrase came from. But also even just having a shovel in your car. I also remember driving by on Highway 200 and there was a fire going on and it was like, if I could have done something right away, it would have been easy, but it got out of hand.
Yeah. It can definitely, like, it grows exponentially, you know? So if you were there right at that moment and you were prepared, like having a shovel and some water in your vehicle, you could potentially stop something from turning into a much bigger event than it had to be. The campfires, if you come across those... I'm sure like you did, you just
put it out.
Yeah. Do what the other person failed to do. And hopefully if everyone does that, we can cut down on our human caused fires, which are the majority of our fires.
Yeah. I remember reading the statistics about that. I mean, it's huge, like 90% or something are human caused.
Oh, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's shocking.
I don't know if that's the right number.
You're right. Yeah, I think it's like 86 now, so maybe we're doing some good with all of this education.
So what are, again, just to say it again in case we miss something, What can citizens, humans, do to keep our forests and our community safe? As we know, in California, a forest fire went through whatever town that was, and
Paradise.
Mm-hmm. And we want to be part of the solution and part of the help. So what would you say? Besides, if you see something, do something, call 911. Own actions at our homes.
You're talking about like fireproofing around your home?
Well, that is one thing, because that protects your home. But being, you know, all the things we've talked about, but in general.
Yeah.
Since it's such a big part of the human connection is what is causing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cigarettes out the car window, whatever.
Yeah,
don't
they're
do it.
Yeah, parking in tall, dry grass with your ATV or your UTV when it's really dry, the muffler can start a fire. Obviously, people lighting fireworks off. To be fair, in Idaho, it's not as heavily leaning towards human cause. We do have a lot of lightning fires, too. That's a nationwide stat, so we're a little more responsible here than we are in most places, which is good.
Nice.
But yeah, it's still a majority of our fires are human.
And I remember one fire that was started by a chain that had come off of somebody's car and
dragging chains
along asphalt, and it sparked.
Yeah.
Or chainsaws.
Oh, yeah. That's.
Yeah. Newer chainsaws, they have spark arresters and things that are supposed to help mitigate that. But that goes back to the fire restrictions. If it gets too hot and dry, we have a restriction called Hoodow, which you can't saw after 1 p.m., I believe. And you have to wait an hour before you leave when you're finished sawing, just to make sure nothing does start.
That's important information.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people forget about that part. You know, you hear restrictions and you think campfires, but there is some other things to it.
There is quite a bit to know, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
I just want to let our listeners know this is 88.5 KRFY. We're here talking with Nick Henriksen. He's the fire protection technician with the Sandpoint Ranger District. And we're talking about the upcoming fire season and what we should know. And we started to get into homeowners. And Gene, you mentioned things that you can do around the home. And I think there's a program that you can get someone to come out, assess your fire safety, and get help with that.
I'm sure you know more than I do about it, but the bonfire program is there, but it's basically for bigger pieces of land. I mean, if on my 2 acres, they're not going to come out and do that.
Yeah.
But maybe there's something else.
Yeah, bonfire is one thing I was going to mention. It is great for kind of bigger chunks of property, like you said, and sometimes they'll even help with like the work, the thinning, and getting rid of ladder fuels and whatnot. Firewise, I don't know if either of you have heard of Firewise. There's specifically one for Idaho, and it's basically, they have some really good stuff on their website about what you can do personally to your home, and then you can also get together, so like you, in your, if you had a community, all you need is like 8 households. So if you have 8 or more,
is for Firewise.
For Firewise, oh, yes. Okay. You can kind of like come together, and they'll help you create a plan of how you can all basically mitigate some of these fire risks. Because you know you have your immediate household, but then as you get further out, you may start like bumping into other people's property, and if their property is very overgrown, it's a higher fire danger.
That's exactly my situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm familiar. I have a similar situation. But yeah, so if you're able to kind of get together with all these people, I think they also have ways to kind of help, maybe even gather some funds and volunteers to just get through there and do some thinning. And if you can get what we call ladder fuels, which is branches and like debris that can let a fire get up into a canopy of a tree, you can do a lot of good there, because a fire on the ground obviously is much less intense than a fire that starts like torching trees and getting up into the canopy.
So Firewise could help you make a plan. They might not fund the actual work, but at least you have a blueprint to go off of.
Yeah, and they have like a checklist that kind of gives you a general thing that you can do, you know, clearing your gutters and getting pine needles off your roof. And, you know, it doesn't have to be like these huge fixes where you're spending thousands of dollars to get, you know, concrete siding or something. Removing fuels like 0 to 5 feet away from your house. So mulch is pretty. It's beautiful. We all love it. But maybe some like rock or something.
Right next to the house.
Non-combustible, because the majority of houses that burn down are from embers. It's not from like the flaming front. The wall doesn't hit it. It's the ember wash that gets into those spots, like the needles in your gutter, and starts. So if we can keep
the tinder away.
Yeah, exactly. Like no fuel bed for the ember to start, then you're already setting yourself up a lot better off.
And what about having spigots around your house with hoses that are, you know, you could easily quickly turn on and start watering down things? I mean, that's the kind of stuff that FireWise might help citizens understand. And I mean, obviously that's an obvious thing you can do, but
yeah,
maybe not so obvious.
Mm-hmm. Water would definitely be helpful. You just got to be, you know, careful you don't soak your house up at the same time. But yeah, wetting, keeping all your grass green around your property and mowed short, that would help too.
It's a wonderful excuse for people like me who don't like to do gardening. Yeah. No, I'm not putting any plants around my house.
Exactly. Just hardscape it. Yeah, all. Right. Yeah. Gravel everywhere.
Hardscape it. Gravel. So we've talked about, Gene, you mentioned the evacuation order that you had last year during the Sagal fire that was happening. Nick, who decides when evacuations, you know, are going to happen? And how are citizens, residents informed? Because not everyone is socially connected on social media. So how does that work? And the different agencies working together?
Yeah. So, like, regardless of where the fire is, evacuations are always issued by the county sheriff. And in Bonner County, I don't know if either of you have it, Nixel. Have you heard of this? Yeah.
On our phones.
Yeah, that's a great way to just stay updated, not only on evacuations or fires, but, you know, if the Long Bridge is closed, you live in Sagal, you know, it's good to know if the Long Bridge is closed or something. And all you got to do for that is you just text your zip code to 888-777, and then you'll just be kind of enrolled for any of those updates.
What about the old timer that doesn't have a cell phone and isn't socially connected on some kind of a device? How does everyone get informed? Because I think that does exist.
Neighbors. I mean, we went through this last summer because we have a neighborhood watch, and there are people who are like, if you want me, you're going to have to knock on the door.
On it.
So I think that kind of connectedness with your neighbors ahead of time. But I also found out, because I was worried about this, that when they actually issue the "you got to leave now" order, the first responders are going around knocking on
people's
doors.
That's what I wanted to get to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Someone will come and inform you. You must have gotten a knock.
Well, we didn't get to that level. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't want to totally rely on that, but there is an effort made.
Yeah, they're going to do their best. It's I actually was part of that, too. I live out in Sagal. So my neighbor got a knock. I think we were right on the edge. So, you know, like the sheriff had showed up to the neighbors, and then they had told us about the evacuation. Of course, I knew about it before that. But
inside scoop, huh?
Yeah, inside scoop, yeah.
Well, what are the different levels of evacuation?
There's it's ready, set, go.
Okay.
And ready is you're just, you know, kind of be mindful that it could happen. It's not like you have to pack up everything at that point. And then set, I believe, is like you have the things you need to go ready or even in your vehicle. And then go is like you get out.
Now.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be communicated to homeowners either through Nixel or direct communication through the first responders.
Yeah, you might have a little harder of a time without the technology part of it to know that you're in like ready or set, but you'll know when you're in go, at least. Show up.
Everyone is given the word.
But I think preparedness is a big part of it.
Let's talk about that a minute.
I mean, just and knowing your neighbors, mm-hmm. you know, who's the person who can't get out by themselves, or if a tree goes down across the road, mm-hmm. you know, who's got the chainsaw. I think that's the first, my first response is, you know,
get
doing
together.
That. And then radio, we have radio. Mm-hmm. For us old timers, we still know how to turn on the radio. And
we're hoping here at KRFY, I think I talked to you about it or to Bryce, about having a morning recap of the current situation as the season goes along. It might be there are no notices in Bonner County or in this district, fire district, or it might be the five fires that are around us. What's the status, the current status, or the evacuation status, something like that?
Yeah, yeah. I think Bryce had talked about maybe trying to do something a little more regular. We'll see as fire season goes on, and but I do see the benefit and getting it out to as many people as we can.
Right.
I know Jack, I helped Jack do that last year, just a daily update for that particular fire, but it wasn't
this would
for the
be,
whole region.
This would be daily.
Yeah.
And it might be nothing more than what level it's at, you know, the fire danger levels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And stay tuned. But also, if something was really current, KRFY can broadcast live current situations. So we'll hook in with Bryce would be the person.
Yeah, Bryce is the AFMO in Sandpoint. So he would definitely be the guy that is in tune to all that.
So looking forward, we asked this already, but what does the season look like as far as what you know? You said June is still okay, yeah. But it's going to be July.
Yeah, June is normal, and July and August are high fire danger, which I think every summer July and August are high fire danger. So it seems like it's kind of status quo for what our outlook is so far. The rain has really helped us a lot this late spring, because with that snowpack, I'm sure you and many others were going, oh no, what's fire season going to be like? And so were we, but it's really brought us back down to a much more normal level.
Reasonable level.
Reasonable, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Although I have noticed the patterns here that doesn't mean we don't get smoke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Smoke is almost never from us. It's from somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Canada or Eastern Washington. They let us have a lot of their smoke.
Are we getting any smoke right now? Do we know? Do you monitor that?
We do more so like deep into fire season right now. I drove across the bridge this morning. It's pretty clear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yay.
But we should, you know, that would potentially be another show for us, is I think we've done it before too, is getting people on to tell people how to deal with the smoke,
mm-hmm.
How to protect yourself from
that. That's our goal. Keep our listeners informed. So I want to thank you, Nick, for coming in today, and Jean for joining. Jean Gerth and Nick Henriksen, you are the I wrote all this stuff down. Fire protection technician at the Sandpoint Ranger District.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. And
yeah, thank you. That was great.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Good information.
Yeah, I learned a lot.
Oh, good. Yeah, and you can always call Ranger Station and ask for a fire prevention tech or whoever, and they'll pass the information on to someone, and we'll try and get you the right information or point you in the right direction.
And thank you for the work you're doing.
Yeah.
It's important and vital.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.